Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is a day of liberty and freedom in the United States of America. This is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. You know, this is a grueling business, talk radio. It's like being on a football team, I was told, where it's a full-body contact sport. And if you're good at it, you're good at it. And if you're not, well, you better get off the field. There are victories and there are defeats. And I've been in this business for 15 years. I've had my share of both. Approximately a year or so ago, I brought suit against the group called CAIR, Council on Islamic Relations, a group that has long been suspected to be associated with quite villainous characters around the world. In fact, whether you know it or not, CAIR is still, despite their statements, they are still an unindicted co-conspirator in a federal anti-terrorism trial. These are the people who sued, for example, to permit cab drivers to throw blind people out of cabs, if I'm not mistaken, if they had seeing eye dogs. These are people who have sued wherever you turn. The big story was the flying imam story. Wherever you turn, wherever there's an insult to our civilization and our culture, you will see a lawsuit put together by them and other fellow travelers such as the ACLU or the so-called Electronic Freedom, whatever they call them. All of these left-wing groups are cohorts. Now, I sued them last year for using material from my show to try to harm me and harm my images. They took it out of context. They had me say things that were not right. We sued them on that basis, a copyright lawsuit, and also a RICO lawsuit. After a certain number of months and a couple of $100,000 of my own legal fees, and by the way, so many of you were so generous, I got to tell you that right now, that we created a fund to help me, the Savage Legal Fund. We had to withdraw the lawsuit, not because there were no merits, but because of, I don't know how to describe it to you without exposing exactly what happened. Let us put it to you this way. For reasons that you might be able to put two and two together and come up with, my family had me withdraw the lawsuit. The minute I did that, CAIR pounced and sued me for legal fees. And they, in my opinion, greatly exaggerated the amount of money they had spent. And joining them was another wonderful group of real Americans. I don't even remember their name, the Electronic Something Foundation. They brought a huge action against me for like $180,000 or so in legal fees a few months ago. My attorney, Dan Horowitz, filed a fees motion saying, no, they're not entitled to that amount of money. If they're entitled to anything, it's nowhere near that amount of money. Well, if you ever read their brief, CAIR's brief, you wouldn't believe it. Because there are sentences and paragraphs in there that would have your jaw drop. If I recall correctly, they told the judge, since we're all liberals and Savage is a conservative, you should rule against them and give us our money. Well, I got good news for you today. Judge Ilston, in the most liberal court in America, who was appointed by Bill Clinton, she did the very right thing. She read case law and she threw out the entire lawsuit, that is the suit for fees. And I got to tell you something. Yes, it's a personal victory for me, but it's a victory for you, and I'll tell you why. This is a huge victory for me for the reason that it will be a huge victory for America. If America does not want Sharia law in America, you better pay close attention to this case. Do you understand what I just said to you? This is a huge victory for Michael Savage, but also for the rest of America, who has learn to be very afraid of this lawsuit-happy group of intimidators called CAIR, in my opinion. Because wherever you turn, wherever there's an attempt to push Sharia law, they're disguising it as a civil rights complaint. But it isn't a civil rights issue, is it? I want to read the article to you. CARES attempt to extract fees from Michael Savage rejected. Clinton-appointed judge denies motion by controversial Islamic lobby group. It's from WorldNet Daily. It's up on michaelsavage.com. And for those of you who are legally inclined, go to michaelsavage.com and read the brief itself filed by Judge Ilston. I will summarize parts of it for you. If any of you care to comment upon this tremendous piece of news, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. In the United States District Court for the Northern District of California, Michael Savage, Plaintiff versus Council on American-Islamic Relations. Order denying defendant's motion for attorney's fees and costs. It's a phenomenal finding. You should get this printed up, and you should file it. This is like an addendum to the Bill of Rights, what you have here. That's what it is. It's an addendum to the Bill of Rights. Story number two on the Savage Nation. I have been invited to appear on the Larry King Live Show Friday. And I'm going to ask you whether you think I should go. Larry King Live would like Dr. Savage to be on the show Friday night. Listen to this. To discuss Proposition 8. Now, that's, of course, the gay marriage issue, which was rejected. It was found yes on 8, which meant no gay marriage. And voters in California, Arizona, and Florida said no to gay marriage. Well, they've gone crazy. The gay establishment has gone nuts. They pulled out every card they have. They've gone to every puppet that they have in a governor's office, Schwarzenegger, every puppet they have in the attorney general's office, Moonbeam. Wherever you turn, there are no new lawsuits saying to the people, drop dead, you're worthless, your vote means nothing, go to hell, we don't care what you say, we'll do what we want, and then we'll come back to you and run for office again. So now they have the nerve to say to Michael Savage, would you please come on the show Friday night to discuss Proposition 8? Now take a guess who's on the panel. I'm going to read it to you. Joy Behar, whoever she is from The View, will be the guest host that night on the gay marriage issue. They want me to go to the L.A. studio on Sunset Boulevard, Prop 8. It says either panel discussion or one-on-one with Michael. And here are the other guests that day. Mayor Enitusum Newsom, that's the San Francisco mayor, who has destroyed his political career, in my opinion. A guy named Dan Savage, who writes a filthy sex column, in my opinion. And he also writes for gay.com, a really fine American site, that one is. Some musician I never heard of. Another guy from a church I never heard of. An actress from Sex and the City who came out as a lesbian. Oh, how exciting. Oh, my God, you're so wild. Oh, you're really a lesbian. Oh, my God, that is just so cool and far out. What a great role model you are, Cynthia. Then there's Bishop Harry Jackson. And then there's Reverend Jim Garlow, senior pastor at Skyline Wesleyan Church. Should I go on the show? Because I don't think I'm going to go on the show. I don't think I want to be the sock puppet for this group. So there's two topics for right now. Savage beats CARE. Judge rules in favor of Savage regarding the fees judgment. Number two, Larry King live invitation. Should Savage go on the show? And number three, amongst others, I'm going to talk about a new movie that's opening in New York tomorrow called The Dukes. And it was directed by Robert Davi, who's been in 104 films. I don't know the gentleman, but I really liked the movie. I got an advanced DVD of it. Frankly, I enjoyed it last night. I watched it on the screen at home. It's going to be opening tomorrow. And I'll tell you more about that movie a little later on the Savage Nation. Now play Church Bells May Ring by the Willows, and we'll go to some callers here on the Savage Nation. Ding dong. It is a little doo-wop on the Savage Nation. It's early for Rock and Roll Friday. It's only Thursday. But frankly, I feel like celebrating because occasionally there are victories that are worth celebrating. This is the Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the ruling by the judge. Take a look at the story from WorldNet Daily on my website. And of course, it's very important that you call 1-800-449-8255 if you care to discuss this right here on the Savage Nation. Darling, and I want you for my own. I'll give you any. Savage. I want to personally thank everyone listening to this program who may have contributed to the Savage Legal Fund. Your money has come in mighty handily. But we almost lost nearly $180,000 when CAIR had the nerve to try to, stick it to me for bringing a legitimate lawsuit. They claimed it was a frivolous lawsuit that I just made up. Well, the judge didn't agree with them, and she's not a conservative. She's really probably a good judge. I don't know the woman, but frankly, it gives me hope under the Obama administration that we might just get some fairness in the courts. Because she said, listen to this, and I'll read you a few sentences. She said, on August 29, 2008, the defendants filed a motion for an award of attorney's fees and costs under the Copyright Act, and that would be them. And the motion was scheduled for hearing on November 14, 2008. The court finds this matter appropriate for resolution without oral argument and hereby vacates the hearing. Then she goes back to the story. Savage brought suit in this court on December 3rd, 07 for copyright infringement and civil RICO, racketeer influence and corrupt organizations claim against defendants. That would be CAIR. Blah, blah, blah. Then she goes on and says, the copyright claim was dismissed with prejudice, while the RICO claim against CAIR was dismissed with leave to amend, meaning we had the right to amend it. Plaintiff failed to amend this complaint, and judgment was entered on August 15, 08. Now, we did not amend the complaint in court, but we spent a lot of money amending the complaint, and we were going to amend the complaint, but owing to certain situations that I can't describe on this radio show, I was told by my family to withdraw this complaint. And I think you can put two and two together, given the climate of a certain organizations in this world. Anyway, so I withdraw the complaint. My lawyers try to settle with them. They say they try to settle with my lawyers, but they never did, and we can prove it. And we presented that evidence to the judge. And the judge, I think, did not like their behavior. That's my interpretation. And I'm not going to read you everything she wrote, but listen to this. This is very important. You go down to the end of this case. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not a lawyer, so it's hard for me to find it. Judgment was entered. Court has discretion. Blah, blah, blah. It's only two pages long. It's on my website. Here it is. I got it. It's lines 18 through 22 of the finding of the judge, which is on my website. And she writes, here the purposes of the Copyright Act were affected only marginally. Plaintiff's Copyright Act claim, that's me, was never strong and was litigated anemically. That's what she's saying, so she didn't accept it. Plaintiff saved his heavy artillery for his RICO claim, which he ultimately abandoned despite having been given leave to amend. Now, here comes the punchline. The action was terminated promptly after resolution of defendant's first motion. Here is the line I've been building up to. While the court agreed with defendants, that's them, fair use argument, there were features of the decision which required analysis. That is a pregnant statement. There were features of the decision which required analysis. That means that had we gone ahead with the RICO complaint, we're not so sure it would have been thrown out so fast, okay? And I am glad to see that the judge at least read it to understand that we didn't just make this up out of whole cloth because we're bad guys. And so I want to thank all of you who have funded the Freedom of Speech Fund. I want to thank America. I want to thank the judge. Now, look, the case is not necessarily over. CAIR can go back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and appeal the judge's fee motion ruling. However, I'm on the recommendation of several attorneys that it's very, very unlikely that they will be found. It'll be found in their favor because this judge has used case law to say why they're not entitled to a dime. New York City, Steve on WOR. Thanks for calling the show today. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, in denying this Rule 11 motion, this federal judge was saying you had enough ammunition to initiate your lawsuit in the first place, not that you had...
That's right. She said that it wasn't frivolous, as they claimed. They made statements about me that are totally false. They said Savage sues everybody. He makes up cases. The fact of the matter is I'm one of the least litigious people on earth. And I only did this because they were trying to destroy my reputation. And so, therefore, yes, there is absolute merit in what I stated.
Yeah, even at the time, the time is reckoned from the time the lawsuit was filed, and she felt that there was what they call a prima facie case, enough evidence that falls within the four corners of this RICO claim. So,
Aware that this group CAIR received $500,000 from Saudi Prince Al Waleed bin Talal, The Sheik, whose $10 million relief check after 9/11 was rejected by then New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani after he blamed U.S. policy toward Israel for the attacks. Did you know that?
Well, they're certainly well-funded in the wrong direction.
Yes. There's more in the article, and I thank you for calling. The group said Bin Talal is not a member of the Saudi Arabian government. He is a private entrepreneur and international investor. WND writes, this may be a distinction without a difference. Savage's lawyers argue, since Bin Talal is a member of the Saudi ruling family. Quote, CAIR is proud to receive support of every individual, CAIR argued, as long as they are not an official of any foreign government and there are no strings attached to the bequest, close quote. Well, listen to what WND writes. The UAE endowment to CAIR was specifically earmarked for public relations efforts to repair the image of Arabs and Muslims in America after public outrage doomed the Dubai bid to run U.S. ports. So whether you know it or not, because I was the lead talk show host in America on the Dubai ports deal, I was marked by them. Do you understand they have me in their sights and they still do? Do you understand the kind of life I'm living? Do you have any idea what kind of world I live in? Lawyers for Savage argue that CAIR may have used UAE funds and other foreign support to attack the radio host. I suggest you read the article, CAIR's attempt to extract fees from Michael Savage rejected. It's linked up from WND on michaelsavage.com. And frankly, we have a lot to celebrate, particularly those of you who gave $10, $20, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, or $2,500. I want to thank every one of you if you sent even $1 at the time. This is a victory for me personally, but it's also it's a vindication for me personally, but it's a victory for liberty in the United States of America. It's a victory for the rest of America who will no longer be afraid of this lawsuit-happy group of intimidators. If you have a legitimate case against anybody, don't be afraid. Go ahead and try to find your freedom in the courts of the United States of America. Again, go to michaelsavage.com, 1-800-449-8255. This is a very good day for liberty. Play the church bells, play Ding Dong, whatever you want, and I'll be back to field your calls on this anniversary of freedom here on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Truth about me ring. Truth about me ring. Truth about me ring.
It is the Savage Nation. Of course, the reason we're playing the church bells may ring is because we have a victory, a real victory. And that is CAIR, that wonderful all-American group, attempted to extract almost $200,000, about $180,000 from me after a lawsuit was withdrawn by me. And my attorney, Dan Horowitz, joins us right now to give you the inside story. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation. First of all, buddy, congratulations. Thank you very much. I read your brief. It was brilliant.
Well, Michael, congratulations to you and to your listeners. Thank you for supporting us.
Dan, I claim that this is a huge victory for me personally, but also for the rest of America who is afraid of this lawsuit-happy group of intimidators. What's your opinion of that statement?
It is a great victory. It's a victory for the First Amendment, and I think that's ultimately what this judge stands for, both in ruling against us on the First Amendment claim when CAIR threw out the copyright claim, and then saying to CAIR, you know what? Michael Savage had a good faith belief in what he did, and just because you were protected by the First Amendment, our Constitution, we're not going to let you punish or hurt good-willed people like Savage.
Well, I'm you know, look, I got to tell you something. I'm not a big fan of Bill Clinton and his policies. I'm not a big fan of liberal judges. But in this case, I think the judge was really, you know, justice was blind. She read case law, and she said, no, you're not entitled to fees. Weren't they about $180,000 they were claiming, Dan?
They were claiming, I mean, I think when they scratched their nose, they billed 45 minutes of time. It was a very ridiculous, you know, petition for fees. We wrote up, Michael, that entire RICO action for less money than they're claiming for their little copyright flurry of attacks, which were really very little and amounted to nothing.
Well, what about that other group that joined them, the Electronic Something Foundation? Who are they?
You know, it's funny. It's a group that's supposed to be the ACLU of the Internet. And I've supported them, Michael. You know I'm a liberal. I've donated my time to that group, as has your First Amendment attorney, Marty Garbus. But they took
I know you're a liberal, but somehow you seem to be more conservative than me on some issues.
Well, because I believe that when people work, they're entitled to keep their money, and that we're all equal, even if we don't belong to a certain group that's politically correct to support.
But you mean a conservative like me still has rights in America?
I think so. And I think, interestingly, Judge Ilston believes it, too. You know, when the fairness doctrine gets put back in and they try to close you down, I hope that your lawsuit gets heard in front of a real believer in the First Amendment like Judge Ilston, because regardless of who appointed her, she'll support your right to speak.
Well, I want to ask you about that since you brought it up. I'm not a lawyer. You are. You're a First Amendment guy. You know the liberal courts better than anyone I know. Your cousin Marty knows it very well. I mean, he's represented Lenny Bruce. How could they impose a fairness doctrine and say this segment of the media is singled out for fairness? How is that possible?
I don't think it is possible. And how do you label Michael Savage one way or the other? You are your own man. You say what you believe. Are they going to put on to count to you somebody who says what they don't believe? You can't be pigeonholed.
Well, I also want to ask you this, Dan, because I raised it on my show yesterday. I was the first, but I won't be the last. If they try to reimpose the so-called fairness doctrine, could we claim that they should start with NPR since it's all left-wing all the time?
I think so. Then they'll close down MSNBC, and then they'll make the people on CNN disclose who they really support during elections. We all know who they support, but they make believe they're middle of the road. But I don't have to believe that. It's ridiculous. The fairness doctrine is government control of thought, and it is the greatest threat to liberty that has come our way in a long time.
You know, you're the kind of liberal I could have a glass of wine with, Dan, which is why I like you. Because how many times have I said real liberals like Dan Horowitz, as opposed to the new fascist disguised as liberals, understand that that the First Amendment was written to protect not polite speech, but speech that is offensive. Am I right about that, Dan?
It's not only are you right about it, but this just came to my mind as you were saying that. You know, I do a lot of TV at CNN, and I want you to know that there are a lot of people at CNN at the studio who love your show. So a lot of people agree that there needs to be a divergence of views, otherwise we die.
It's interesting you should say that. I'm in Hollywood right now. I've been down here for a week. I'm broadcasting from a remote studio. And I've been meeting a few people here and there. I have found out that there are fans in Hollywood going so high up the food chain, I was shocked. Because I work in a bubble, as you know, Dan. I basically live in my own world. I'm reclusive. I hardly ever go out to public. I have very few friends. You know, that's the truth. So I don't really know who listens to the show. I've been learning that I am very popular in Hollywood, way up the food chain.
Yeah, I mean, there is nothing like somebody who honestly talks from the heart to get your juices going. And anybody who's a liberal who doesn't want to think doesn't have to listen to your show. But, you know, when you talk, it makes everybody think, and it makes people argue, and that's what America is about. That's why we beat CARE in this case. I'll tell you why, Michael. Because when Judge Ilston said you, being potentially a radical Islamic organization, still have rights under the American Constitution, and then she turned around and said, but you can't take money from Americans who want to face you and challenge you, we won. We beat them. It's speech. She supported speech, and you are speech, and that's why this is a great victory.
Do I have this right? In their motion for fees, didn't they claim something along the lines of, since we're liberals and you're a liberal judge and Savage is a conservative, we should get him, in more words than one? Am I paraphrasing incorrectly?
As I read their papers, they kept citing your citations on your website to the Reverend Wright's hateful speech. They put things in front of the judge that I thought, and I put in my papers, I thought were pandering to what they believed the judge's point of view was, and I thought that was so offensive and so stupid. Anybody who knows this judge knows that she is right down the middle, and you cannot influence her politically.
You mean they were taking articles that I posted on my website about Reverend Wright and making believe that was bad?
Yes, exactly. And that somehow that showed that you deserve to be sanctioned more. I mean, they had a very convoluted argument that was just a very thin cover for the fact that they thought wrongly that they can influence a federal judge by politics.
Well, what happens next? They can appeal this. Do you think they will, or will they win at the next level?
They can't win at the next level. This judge is tremendously respected. Just like when she wrote her copyright opinion, I didn't agree with it, but I said right in public, I respect it, and I respect how carefully she reasoned it. The same applies to this ruling. You can't beat a judge like that. A judge who is fair, when they go for you or against you, you can't beat them because they're...
She cited case law as to why they're not entitled to fees. If they take it to the Ninth Circuit, what are they going to argue?
Nothing. They can't. She cited correct case law, And then in her judgment, in things, in areas where she has sole and exclusive rights to choose one way or the other, she made the choices that favored us. They cannot overturn it.
All right, Dan, I have a special gift for you. I think you know what it's going to be, because there's only about 1,000 copies left of the first printing, first edition of Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories. Dan, can you name one story in that book, I'm sorry to put you on the spot, that you haven't read that you'd love to read if you get a copy?
Oh, God, I don't know, Michael.
All right, Dan, I'm going to send it to you because I know you want to read The Nympho in Alley Pond Park.
Well, you know, I know Alley Pond Park, so yeah, that's the one.
Or how about When Pasta Was Spaghetti, if you don't want to read the other one. Dan, I'm going to send you that book because I know you're going to love it. You know, my son said to me that he read the book and he learned things about me he didn't even know. He said, you know, parents only tell you what they want you to hear. He said, I had no idea these things happened to my father. He told one of his girlfriends.
When you read those segments on the air, it's just incredible. It comes so much from your heart, and anybody who knows you knows that you are the same on the air as you are in person, and it's such a gift to us that you're here.
That's very sweet. You know, somebody said to me yesterday, Savage, you're like the grandfather of America. I didn't realize I'm that old. Then he goes on to say, oh, yeah, and my grandfather has Alzheimer's now, and you remind me of him. That was some compliment, huh, Dan?
Well, you know, he was trying. It's a liberal.
He didn't mean anything by it. He raised an interesting issue, Dan, which comes back again to the fairness doctrine and freedom of speech. When idiots like Charles Schumer, who had the nerve to say that pornography and conservative speech is the same, did you hear that soundbite we once played, Dan, last week?
No, but you know, it sounds like Schumer.
Dan, you won't believe this. Guys, could you pull that up? Isn't Charles Schumer a Harvard graduate?
Schumer is basically trying to appeal to the old-time New York big mouths. We like to get tough and swagger around. But he goes off the deep end. He's no fun anymore. He says such crazy things.
But, Dan, do you guys have it, yes or no? Okay, when we find it, Dan, I'm going to play it. Wait, we have another shocker. Dianne Feinstein is quoted as saying, when we had a fairness doctrine, she said, things were more correct in the media. Speech was more correct. I got chills up my spine as to how blind this woman really is, Dan, that she doesn't even understand what she's saying, because if she did, she'd understand that it's right out of communist China. Speech was more correct when we had a fairness doctrine? Isn't that the purpose of the First Amendment, to have incorrect speech permitted in the public sphere?
Thank God that we have somebody like Judge Ilston, a liberal appointed by Clinton, to protect us, because we really do.
Here it goes. Play it now.
It's not that this is like printing a broadside. You would never say anyone who wanted to hire a printing press or go on a computer has to have any view. Do you think we should allow people to put pornography on the air? Absolutely not, particularly on television and radio.
So he's comparing conservative speech, conservative talk, with pornography. Dan, is that about as imbalanced as something you've ever heard?
Well, actually, I think I've heard that kind of speech when I look back on the history of Mussolini and Hitler, where they espouse liberal views and then twist it to say that the government then controls, for the good of everybody, any view that comes out.
Oh, my God. Daniel, you're the kind of liberal who can save this country.
Michael, I learned
that. Look, Dan, there's going to have to be a coalition of genuine liberals like you, as opposed to the phonies who are using the liberal label, but they're really fascists. And conservatives like me, we have to join together before we lose this country's basic freedoms.
Well, I agree, but I do want to point out that what I just said, I learned originally by listening to your show, and then I read a book on that topic. So I learned from listening to you.
You learned from listening to me? Well, maybe you learned how to make a meatball from visiting with me. I don't know. I just wanted to say thank you. It's been a long road, and I know you put a lot of work into this. I was shocked at how much work you had to put into the... when they sued me for money, I was stunned. And then you had a 23-page brief you had to file? How long was that?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, first of all, the lawsuit. I don't know if you have the lawsuit on your website, but it was over 120 pages.
Right.
And the briefs were 30 pages. It was a massive amount of work. But what we uncovered is that the Holy Land Foundation and CARE are really hand in hand. And let me make a point that we haven't brought up. Right now, the Holy Land Foundation, the charitable arm of Hamas in America, is in trial in Houston, in Texas, and the jury is deliberating, and they could be convicted of crimes relating to funding Hamas using U.S. money. And guess who their number one spokesman is in defense of this group? The head.
It has to be. Who is it? CAIR?
Yeah, CARE's Cahil Meek, who's the head of the Hungry for Justice Coalition, as the Associated Press reports it. That is, I'm telling you, he's actually a board member of CARE. That's not been reported by the...
So they're all interlocked in one big group, and we the people are facing a new age in America with a changing president, a changing Congress, a changing court system. The one hope we have, Dan, as I say, is that liberals like you will remember that the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech and offensive writings, not to protect polite speech and polite writings, because we wouldn't need a First Amendment for polite speech, would we?
That's right. And your expression...
Dan, I'll tell you what. Not only do I want to thank you, and I hope that this ends here and now, but again, I want to invite you for a glass of wine when I come back, and hopefully we'll get together.
That's great, Michael. Thank you.
Dan Horowitz, thanks very much. It's a great day for freedom. It's 47 minutes after the hour. We are celebrating the following. CARE's attempt to extract cash from Michael Savage rejected. Read the ruling Savage beats CARE on fees motion. Of course, there are other stories and other topics which I will get to. Will Hillary Clinton be the Secretary of State? Does the bailout lack oversight despite billions pledged? You bet you. You want some government money? Apply now. Ex-Hitler youth issues dire warning to America. Here's a man who grew up under Hitler, and he is warning America that the historic Christian faith of America that is being thrown out is going to lead us right to totalitarianism, and it is being led by whom? The conservatives, he says? No, by the liberals. Listen to what I just said to you. An ex-Nazi who grew up in Hitler, Germany, warns America that by throwing out God and by following so-called liberal beliefs, we are on the road not to tyranny, but to absolute Hitler-like totalitarianism. I'll be right back.
What do you make of the gay marriage issue?
You know, when Rosie O'Donnell was on, we had a pretty interesting show going on. Truth about me, truth about
me. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about freedom. We're talking about liberty. We're talking about victory. We're talking about the topics of the day here on the Savage Nation. The Proposition 8, the gay marriage issue, is a very important one. Not solely because the people spoke and spoke clearly, but for many other reasons as well. There was an unintended consequence of liberal activism. They went and they signed up black people to vote, many of whom never voted before. They used ACORN, as you well know, to find people who may have been qualified to vote, who hadn't voted, hadn't registered, and they got them to vote and they got Obama elected. What they didn't know is that black people, by and large, at least in this election, 7 out of 10 said no to gay marriage. They didn't think that would happen. And that is because they look down on black people. As you well know, the white elites look down upon virtually everybody, but in particular people of color. And they assumed that because they'd vote for Obama, well, gee, they're in our corner. They didn't understand the people that they were registering. They had no idea who they were, nor did they care. And now they're freaking out. And so when you see a governor like Schwarzenegger, an attorney general like Jerry Brown, a mayor like Newsom, wherever you turn, you see the political establishment saying to the people, although you have voted, drop dead, we're going to shop it to a liberal court and we're going to overturn you. Do you understand what tyranny is? If that is not tyranny, would you explain what tyranny is? How much worse does it get that millions of people don't get violent, they go to the polls like good people, and they vote? They didn't like the outcome of Obama winning. 55 million people didn't like that Obama won. But nobody burned anything down. Nobody went out shooting. They said, I didn't like it. I don't look forward to it. But that's America. And what? What are we supposed to do now that these liberal, you want to call them liberal? I don't even like the word. These fascistic politicians have the nerve to say, but we're going to take away your vote on gay marriage. I'm going to tell you right now that if Schwarzenegger does this, if the California Supreme Court dares to spit in the face of the voters again, if God gives me the strength, I will bring 50 to 100,000 people to the state capitol. I will ask every trucker in America to join us in protest against the governor, protest against the judges, protests against a system that's upside down. When democracy fails, the people must stand up and right it. And if it has to be me, so it'll be me. Now, I was invited to appear tomorrow night on Larry King to talk about this proposition. Frankly, I don't think I'm going to go. Should I go? Yes or no? Yes or no? Should I go or shouldn't I go? New York City, Jane, W-O-R, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, first, I just want to say thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for being out there. You have conservative women right here in Long Island, New York, that listen to you faithfully, and we are so emotional because we hear your voice, and we just wish you could hear us back. I just want
to... You know, I wish to God I could sit in the living room with even a small group like yours and see the reactions to my show. Radio hosts work in the dark. We work alone. And it's a very odd feeling to be, it's like being a coal miner in many ways. We don't even know who our audience is. I mean, we hear that it's millions, but we don't know who they are. But it's women like you, Jane, who make this worthwhile, because we're not all dead. We're not all brain dead. We're not corpses. We are alert. We're alive. We love America. We love the First Amendment. We love democracy. And we don't like tyrants like Jerry Brown, Schwarzenegger, and a mayor to say, take your vote and shove it, Jane.
Absolutely.
Now, Jane, before we go on, yes or no, should I go on Larry King?
Michael, you know, I think your voice is heard everywhere, and I am concerned, and I have reservations that this could possibly be a setup for you. When I heard you say the people that were going to be on that show, Joy Behar for one, I don't think she deserves your presence.
I don't know who she is. I hear she's a loudmouth, screeching leftist who makes a fool of herself, but I really don't know who she is. She's like a screeching yenta in Bloomingdale's rushing for a sale. I'm going to send you a free copy of Guess What?
Yes, I would like to have a copy. Thank you.
You're going to get a free copy to read Fly in the Tuna from Political Zoo.
Savage.
I mean, from Psychological Nudity. God.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, and we are celebrating today because of a court ruling in my favor and in the favor of freedom and liberty and in the favor of the thousands upon thousands of people who contributed to the Savage Legal Defense Fund. You can read all about it on michaelsavage.com. CARES attempt to extract cash from Michael Savage rejected. Or read the ruling itself, Savage beats CARE on fees motion. And this should give you a lot of encouragement about the court system, because the judge was appointed by Bill Clinton. She's a noted liberal, but she found, she found fairly. She read case law, and she threw out their fee motion against me. And we're talking about $180,000 in fees they were claiming. It was ludicrous. So what I'm saying here is, if you are afraid of CARE because you're afraid they're going to sue you, or you're afraid of CARE because of their reputation, and you have a legitimate case, whether you're a city manager, a mayor, or whatever, as we saw all over this country, wherever there's a case of the attempt to impose Sharia law, it's them behind it. It's a very, very suspicious group, and we all know that. However, they have rights just as I do. And today I won, and they lost. This is the Savage Nation. Topic number two is, I've been invited on Larry King for tomorrow night to discuss Proposition 8, the so-called homosexual marriage issue. Now, they lost in court. They lost at the ballot box. But that's not good enough for the gay mafia, is it? They lost when it came up to a vote in three states. They lost in Florida. They lost in Arizona, and they lost in California. And so what they're doing is they're taking their tens of millions of dollars, the gays are, and they've shopped it to Governor Schwarzenegger. They've shopped it to Attorney General Brown. They've shopped it probably much well beyond that into the media. And they're coming down against democracy itself, saying, screw you. We have the power. We have the money. Drop dead. No, they don't understand we have the power. They may have the money, but we have the power. If they take it to those rats at the California Supreme Court, and they again slap us in the face, and I have the strength, and that's a big if I have the strength, because I'm only one man, I will attempt to organize up to 100,000 people or more to rally outside the California Assembly or outside the California Supreme Court and express our opinion and our outrage. I'm also going to ask every truck driver in America, should that happen, to join us in ways that only they know how to join us. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. San Diego, Carl, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, go, Carl. You're on the radio. Fire away.
Okay, first of all, let me tell you, I was one of your contributors for what it's worth. But let me tell you something. Justice walks when money talks. But you just proved the opposite. You know, when I read the newspapers, I only read the comics. But if I want to find out the truth, I go always in the back pages, and I see things that shock you. You're the kind of guy that you should make your own newspaper, I swear to God. Because what you're saying is so true. It hits home. Why the hell did we vote if these idiots are pulling this stunt? As far as Schwarzenegger is concerned, let me go back to Austria. That's the way I feel about it.
No, Schwarzenegger's always been a fraud. He's a chameleon and a faker. I knew he was when he appointed the former governor's chief of staff. I saw what was going to happen in the state. I mean, we know he's married to a Kennedy. We know his policies are liberal. We know he was selling only his ugly looks and his muscles. And the people, of course, bought it because the people, unfortunately, are very gullible. But let's put that aside. The fact of the matter is we voted fair and square. We won. They have no right to take it back to those stinkers on the Supreme Court. But what do you feel about my victory, Carl, today over CAIR, who tried to get 180 grand? You have a free copy of Psychological Nudity under one condition. Only if you tell me one story you're dying to read.
What story? You name it.
I'm sorry. No, you have to name it. Can you name one story in it?
No. I can't.
All right. I'm sorry. I can't give you a free book. As much as I'd like to, you're going to have to go buy it. There's only about 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 copies left of the first edition, first printing. I'm going to be honest with you. They're selling like crazy. I have ordered another rush second printing, but it's going to say right on it. Well, this one says first edition, first printing. It's a collector's item. But I got news for you. The first edition second printing will be a collector's item, which you're probably going to buy for Christmas. So whatever it is, it's for you. It's not for me. If you bought 100,000 copies, it would not change my lifestyle one way or the other. I'm going to tell you that right now. And if you didn't buy any copies, it wouldn't change my lifestyle. I wrote it from my heart. It's my gift to you. Do you understand that? I don't know if people understand that because most writers are struggling. How can I put it to you? Writing is one of the toughest games on earth, particularly today. And you see authors, they'll go to a book opening and sell 30 books. They think that I don't know what they do. They sell 30 books. They make $3 a book. And they make $90. I don't know what they're doing there. They sell 100 books. They make $500. We don't work on that level in talk radio. But I understand how tough things are out there. I know what that game is like. But I never did book signings and book soirees. Even though I'm going to one tonight, which I'm not going to tell you about where it is. It's sad. A guy gives a speech to do a book signing. I'm going to go to it tonight because a lot of people in talk radio are going to be there. I live in a vacuum back up in the San Francisco area. But down here, I've been invited to someone's house who will remain anonymous. And there'll be some other talk show hosts there. Let's see. One is a local and one is a would-be national host. So sparks should fly. I hope not. I'm a very nice guy unless people try to intimidate me. Then I'm not such a nice guy. I'm a very nice guy. If people respect me, I respect them. But if they think they're going to, push me around or shoot their mouth off, I got another guest coming for them. I didn't get where I am by being a pushover. I hope it doesn't come to that, but I'm going. And there's some author there he's going to read. Mainly I'm going for the beer and the pizza. 1-800-449-8255. Mississippi, Justin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's a privilege to talk to you. First of all, congratulations on your win. It's not just a win for liberty. It's a win for free speech. And, Dr. Savage, I have to tell you, your victory over CAIR should contribute to you going and talking to those buffoons on Larry King Live and just showing them why you won the Freedom of Speech Award. You should be more invigorated now than you've ever been.
I understand that, but how can I really win on Larry King when they have a panel of radical big-mouth leftists who are setting me up to be the fall guy to try to turn, you know, put needles in me? I'm going to go on with a yenta like Joy Behar, who sounds like she's rushing for girdles in Macy's and stepping on people's feet, throwing babies out of carriages to buy a girdle on sale?
Well, Michael, I think we need to write...
I'm going to go on a show with any Twosome Newsome who thinks he's God Almighty because he voted for gay marriage, and even though the people overturned it, he thinks he's going to overturn the people? I'm going to go on with a creep who writes a sex advice column for a gay porn site? Why would I want to be in the same room with them?
Well, Dr. Savage, I just thought you...
Wait a minute. If they agree that they will sit in chairs that have throwaway slipcovers on them, and that I could have a slipcover put on the chair that I sit on, maybe I'll go on. I don't know. But they have to guarantee me that these people who write columns and vote this way will have slipcovers on their chairs, because I hate to see good chairs thrown out after they leave.
Right.
Well, thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. When I come back, we have a real treat for you. David Rubin put together an actual what it would sound like if I went on Larry King. Play a second of it for them so they'll know what we're leading them up to. Just play the opening.
What do you make of the gay marriage issue?
You know, when Rosie O'Donnell was on, we had
Pause. So they put together a whole bit of what it would sound like if I went on Larry King and I actually could say what I wanted to say the minute I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, so we're talking about those topics. I mean, there are other basic political stories that anyone could talk about. Another assault of freedom on the airwaves. It's up on my website. You got to read that one. let's see what else. Fired aide to Senator Boxer faces child porn charges. That's really interesting. In that Bernie Ward, left-wing, radical, anti-American, anti-flag, anti-family, anti-military, anti-police San Francisco talk show host, is now in a prison somewhere for disseminating child porn. He used to work for Barbara Boxer. And now a high-level aide to California Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer, another one, has been charged in federal court with receiving and distributing child pornography. Now you understand why liberals are liberal, don't you? You understand completely why they're liberal and why they want conservative talk radio shut up. Because we talk about what they do. The aide, Jeff Rosado, 32, was arrested last Friday. Boxer's office fired him that same day upon learning of the charges, receiving and distributing child pornography. Senator Boxer has zero tolerance for crimes against children, and the employee was immediately terminated. Boxer spokesmouth, so forth, and then said in a statement Thursday, "Our office is cooperating fully with the Department of Justice in this matter." Rosado had worked for Boxer since early 05, beginning in her personnel office as a legislative assistant, and last year became a counsel to the Environment and Public Works Committee, which Boxer chairs. His areas of expertise included water policy, oceans, and endangered species. Well, I would include children in the endangered species. Rosado was tracked through a now-defunct Google program called Google Hello. He exchanged hundreds of pornographic images with another user who had been sharing child porn images and movies with an undercover detective posing as a 13-year-old boy, according to an affidavit by FBI Special Agent Chad Gallagher, supporting the criminal complaint and arrest warrant. In review of Rosado's personal laptop computer, found 200 child porn images and some videos, according to the affidavit. Many of the videos and images depict prepubescent boys engaged in sexual acts. Okay, well, it seems to me, I don't know why Californians vote for this imbecile from Brooklyn, New York. And by the way, they say that Bernie Ward may be looking for a job in a few years when he leaves prison. Maybe Barbara Boxer can rehire him. It's interesting to me that first it was Bernie Ward who worked for Boxer and now another close associate of Boxer. Makes you think why all of the liberals want conservative talk radio stopped. Which brings us to the next topic, which is Larry King's show, inviting Savage on to come on tomorrow night to talk about Prop 8, hosted by some big mouth Yenta, in my opinion, from The View, who'll be the guest host. A girl who sounds like she ran for the girdles at Gertz and knocking over carriages to get a bargain on the girdles. Now she's on Larry King. You know what? I don't think so. Because truthfully, if I was really able to express myself, I'd go in a second. But you know and I know that liberals don't let you talk. Here's a bit of what would happen if Savage were allowed to talk on Larry King. Play it.
What do you make of the gay marriage issue?
You know, when Rosie O'Donnell was on, we had a pretty interesting show going on.
Black voters who voted overwhelmingly for Obama, 7 out of 10 of them supported Proposition 8, which banned homosexual marriage. 7 in 10 black voters, they do not hate gays. Let me make that very clear, nor do I. But they were raised to believe that marriage is between a man and a woman because that's sanity.
It's so boring to people. You know, it's like sex, Larry. When it's over, it's over. After, we're not going to drag it on and smoke a cigarette together.
People should do what they want to do, as I say, but they should not be forced to have their lifestyle imposed on others. The children deserve better than constant gay brainwashing. Everybody knows
genetically,
that.
DNA, it's man and woman.
Well, you know what? I guess the bottom line is I'm proud to represent a city that has diverse points of view, open points of view, that doesn't believe in discrimination and has evolved from the old constructs that I think have frankly held back society.
The argument that current marriage laws somehow discriminate against homosexuals is actually a confusion. It's confusing confusing discrimination against people with making distinctions among different kinds of behavior, according to Thomas Sowell, and I agree 100%.
For 1,500 years, you couldn't live as an openly gay person. Heterosexuality was compulsory, so people lived heterosexual lives, gay people did, and then had gay sex in places where the culture said, okay, there and nowhere else. Bathhouses, bathrooms, some public parks.
But to assert a right to other people's approval is not a right at all. None of us has a right to other people's approval. We have a right to disapprove of certain behaviors, certain so-called lifestyles, and the people spoke in 3 states. Gavin Newsom, any Twosome Newsom, has marginalized himself from the beginning.
You know, I'm a practicing Catholic. I got married in the church 2+ years.
This clown, any Twosome Newsom, had the nerve to bus children and kindergartners into City Hall to watch a lesbian marriage. And so Gavin, rightly so, became the poster boy of what everything wrong with this state and this country. And if this guy thinks he's going to be governor, then he may need a new psychiatrist. It doesn't make us bigots because we do not want to approve of a behavior that we consider destructive to the society at whole. You have a personal decision to be gay, and no one's saying you shouldn't be gay. But now you've gone past that. Now you say, I want to redefine marriage and that you have a right to be married as a gay man. But the government has an obligation to do what is best for the society. So a government has to decide, is gay marriage something that is good for the future of a society or is it possibly harmful?
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, your calls. Don't go away.
Well, that's, of course, the fantasy of what would happen if Savage were on Larry King and I was allowed to talk. But it's the reality of what needs to be said. You know, I have in my hand a vote on Proposition 8. Now, many of you, of course, don't live in California. Most of you don't listen to the show. It's a national show, obviously. But the L.A. Times, I was eating in a deli last night having a piece of stuffed cabbage and a beer. And I saw this in a pile of newspapers there. I like delis because it reminds me of New York with the papers rumpled up. And I grabbed one. And it shows the Prop 8 vote in L.A. County by precinct. And what's amazing, and they do it by color. So those who are against it, meaning those who are in favor of gay marriage, are in orange. And those who were for it, meaning those who wanted to support real marriage, are in blue. What's amazing to me is that all of West Hollywood, you know, is like orange, glowing red, gay, 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 gay. You know where most of the city, though? It's blue. And you know who lives in most of the city? Hispanics, 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 and blacks, and blacks, and blacks. And they voted in favor of heterosexual marriage. This is an amazing thing to look at, but it's the elite gays in Hollywood who are trying to tell the blacks and the Hispanics that
Savage.
They don't know what they're talking about. have a governor like Schwarzenegger or an attorney general like Jerry Brown who say the people voted, let him go to hell, basically, and you realize where the money came for this Proposition 8 to try to oppose it, you realize that the gay mafia has real meaning. The words are not words themselves. But I have an article from the Daily Beast from a few days ago saying Hollywood's gay paparazzi are fuming. And then they quote a few of them. And, of course, the biggest whale of them all is David Geffen. David Geffen is one of the first supporters of Barack Hussein Obama. I guess he thought he'd also win this one, but he didn't. See, David, you win some and you lose some. And that's democracy. But guys like you are not used to losing anything. You think that you're God himself. Of course, that's tied into your behavioral characteristics of narcissism. But the fact of the matter is, even Icarus realized that when he got too close to the sun, the wax would melt. But that's up to God, not up to me. Listen to what David Geffen says. He says, that was our mistake. Considered the town's most powerful person who just happens to be gay, he said, so many African Americans don't look at gay marriage as a civil rights issue, he says, of the community that voted 70% against same-sex marriage, meaning the African American community. He quotes and says, they look on it as a religious one, and we, for whatever reason, fear, arrogance, complacency, we did not do enough outreach to them, meaning the blacks. We need to begin a dialogue with them, because we should be putting this back on the ballot every election, every year, until we win, close quote. So now I have a voting breakdown in Los Angeles County, and I'm not going to read you every city. Most of you don't know these cities. But the top 10 cities in Los Angeles that voted for Prop 8, which eliminated the right of gay of same-sex couples to marry, are the following. Artesia, Hawaiian Gardens, La Mirada, Cerritos, La Habra Heights, Bellflower, Paramount, Palmdale, Carson, and Compton. Carson and Compton are very African-American in their ethnic composition. They voted like 65% in favor of eliminating the right of same-sex couples to marry. I'm sure they voted for Obama like 95%. But apparently the liberals haven't learned that black people have their own minds on certain issues. And they're not on the plantation of David Geffen. You understand that? Now, those are the things I would say on Larry King tomorrow night, but I know darn well I would be edited. I know they would cut me off and not let me make my point. So I'll make them here on the Savage Nation. This is a great forum for truth. It's a great forum for freedom, which is why Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Barack Hussein Obama and the others want to close down talk radio because they don't want any competition. But we have life rafts. The life rafts are the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And thus far, no dictator has arisen in America. We've come close. And the reason no dictatorship has arisen in America is precisely because of the life rafts called the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So when I have said to you for these 15 years, my motto is borders, language, culture. And I have defined what culture meant. And I've said culture includes the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Bible. You understand where I'm coming from, don't you? Joan in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I want to say I'm so happy with the results of your lawsuit and that it gives me new hope in America and the American justice system. And I also want...
Right, and we're going to lose some along the way, and we're going to win some along the way. But remember that each case gives us an opportunity for victory. I have been going through some very, very difficult months in the past few months. When this group tried to get $182,000 or so dollars out of me, it really put me into quite a tailspin, Joan. You can well imagine. Although I had some phenomenal contributors to my fund... That's a fortune they were trying to extract from me for simply trying to protect my name and reputation. That's what it came down to. And now the judge, who's a liberal judge, said no to them, not one penny. That is a victory not only for me, but it's also for the rest of America, who no longer needs to be afraid of this lawsuit-happy group of intimidators, in my opinion.
Right. And I also...
Thanks, Joan. You should have some faith in this country. It just shows you that sometimes... it's darkest before the dawn, to use a very trite phrase. Ohio, Tony, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Congratulations, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to congratulate you on your victory. All the other callers stole my thunder on that one. But you're an inspiration. You really are. You remind me of...
I'm trying to tell America to fight and don't give up so fast and don't walk around down in the mouth and think the country's over. The country's not over at all. Obama is simply a factotum. He's an extremely left-wing guy who's become president. Is it worrisome? You betcha. Can he be a dictator? Only if we let him. And the point here is don't let anybody become a dictator, left wing or right wing. Right now we got a left wing dictator who could potentially arise. We don't want that, do we? So how do we fight it? We fight it through the courts. We the people have the obligation, never mind the duty, to fight it.
You are just like my family, sitting around the table in the Bronx, talking about stories, and it's just, you're amazing.
Well, now you triggered me. I'm like the Manchurian candidate. You said the magic word, stories. If you'll name one story in psychological nudity, a free book will go out to you. Go ahead, please.
Well, that would definitely be Fat Al's tuna.
Okay, you win a free copy of psychological nudity. I'm rubbing my fingers along the embossed edges, the silver lettering over the blue spine. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Vicki, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to say that I would love to see you go on Larry King Live just to see you cut out Joy Behar's liver.
Well, I could cut her up because I stand for the truth, and I'm not so sure she stands for anything except herself. But the fact of the matter is they have the editing power over me. There are also jackals on that group that would cut me up without letting me react to them. They would turn my microphone off. You understand how it works in television? They have total power over you as a guest. They could cut your microphone off. They could go to the other person and make you look like a fool if they want. So if I don't have the control to say what I want, I think it's asking for trouble.
No, I understand. In fact, that was my other comment, was that I think the panel is stacked against you, and I think they would cut off your...
Who? Mayor Any Twosome Newsome? A guy who writes for a gay porno site? A gay musician? I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call. San Diego, Isaiah, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, hi. I was just calling to congratulate you on your victory and say you
thank
should
you.
Not go on the Larry King Live show. Those are just a bunch of idiots who are going to sit around and try to make it a feel-good issue when really it's about the morality of our country, and they're just going to sit there and tell stories and slander you.
I agree. I absolutely agree, and I'm ashamed to tell you, or actually I'm sad to tell you because I have no dog to hunt in this, that other groups have now joined to throw out the people's vote, and it's sickening to read the names of these groups. But I don't think you'll be shocked to hear that adjoining them is the so-called Anti-Defamation League. Now, what in the world would the ADL have to do with homosexual marriage? It was not set up to do things like this. And I'd recommend that if you give money to that group, you think twice about giving them 10 cents. They were not mandated to get involved in an issue like this, particularly to stick a finger in the eye of the voter. The ADL was supposed to stop prejudice against ethnic groups, not suddenly stand up for homosexual marriage, which is a misnomer to begin with. Thanks for the call, in my humble opinion. More groups seek Prop 8 overturn. The ADL, the Asian Law Caucus, the Beit Zedek Legal Services, the Japanese American Citizens League? Can anyone explain to me why the Japanese American Citizens League would join the homosexual groups on an issue like this? Why have these civil rights groups all become part and parcel and one and the same with gay activists? Can anyone explain that? Because I know the answer. You don't even have to bother. Tucson, Arizona. Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, a quick congrats, and I think this is in response to your comment about NPR. The left won't implement the fairness doctrine because of NPR. Listen, I think they know that the listenership is so small compared to conservative talk radio like you and others. I don't think they care. I think they'd be happy to put it out of business because they can't retract it now. They've implemented it as a left mouthpiece, like you said, and they can't just close it.
Well, my point is this, is that if they try to impose the fairness doctrine, and targeting only conservative talk radio, they are on very thin legal ice. They have no basis in their claim whatsoever. Did you hear my interview with my lawyer, Dan Horowitz, who is a certified liberal, but a real liberal, not a fake liberal? And he said there's no legal standing for such a fairness doctrine.
Well, I don't know what to say. They make the rules. I mean,
Wait a minute. Then how do you explain that Judge Ilston throughout the fee claim against me if they make the rules?
Yeah, thankfully we got at least one.
Well, but what I'm saying is there are real judges out there who certainly may be liberal politically, but when it comes to the law, they say, now wait a minute, what does case law say? They're not all fanatics. And we got to understand that we have a good basis in reality here and in the First Amendment to make certain that the fairness doctrine never takes effect in America. And I had a liberal lawyer on who agrees with me. Now, he has a cousin who's another friend of mine, Marty Garbus, who's a tremendous First Amendment guy. I think he would agree with me that there's no basis in a legal fact, for bringing about a fairness doctrine. I'm going to say this right now, guys, and we'll move on from this topic. If the Obama administration and the minions try to impose a fairness doctrine by targeting conservative talk radio, I will put together a war chest with your contributions. I'm not asking for them now. I will put together as much money as I can gather from my friends and family, and we will hire the best First Amendment attorneys in America, some of whom you may have heard on this show, and most of them, by the way, are devout liberals, but they understand what free speech is, and that's the important thing to remember. These are genuine liberals as opposed to the false variety. They are real gold as opposed to fool's gold, which leads me to the next topic, fool's gold. I watched a DVD last night called The Dukes. It's a movie that's opening in New York tomorrow. You know, it's a fun movie. I can't say that it's as good as a Scorsese movie, but it's a fun movie. I enjoyed it, and it's the directorial debut of the beloved tough guy actor Robert Davi. And I think you would enjoy this. I mean, there's no guns in it. There's no curse words in it. And it's an interesting movie. It's about a down-and-out doo-wop band in Los Angeles who are now in their 50s or so. And they take a bumbling detour into burglary in order to make good on their dreams, you know, to open a restaurant, to pay their alimony, whatever. But the cast is very interesting. Chaz Palminteri is in it, who's really good. He was in A Bronx Tale. Peter Bogdanovich, surprisingly, is in this movie. And I don't mean for 2 seconds. He plays Lou Fiola, who is their agent, who to find gigs for an act that has gone utterly obsolete. And actually, the woman who steals the whole show is the woman who plays Aunt V, Miriam Margolis, the Italian trattoria owner. I mean, she comes on the scene, she has so much energy. She's an old Mamma Mia, and she just, you know, all the energy of the movie goes into her hands. I'm not going to tell you the plot. It's a fun kind of stand-up movie. But wait, there's a guy in it named Armin, who was played by Frank D'Amico, a big fat guy. He used to open up for this doo-wop group called the Dukes. And I learned something in my correspondence with Robert Davi, who I've never met. I'm going to read you a few of the emails that went back and forth. I asked him about the, quote, fat guy in the movie. And he says to me, I said to him, who was that fat guy up there? I said, Robert, I really enjoyed the DVD last night. Who is the fat guy? I love to stand up at the end. Where were the restaurant scenes shot? I said, was it in the Elks Lodge in Van Nuys? And what about the Italian food out here? What's a good restaurant? I said, I'm with family out here in Beverly Hills, and I found a restaurant that's real New Jersey. And I said, whenever you come back out here, we'll go out to dinner. So he says, Michael, I've been a fan of yours for a while. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm currently in New York for press on my film. I get back early next week and would love to figure a time to meet with you in the near future. Again, my heartfelt thanks. So then I asked him about the heavyset guy. And listen to this came to me, and I thought I'd share it with you. He says, Mike, yes, that guy Frank was in the hospital for over a year with diabetes, and I set up a screening for him in his hometown of Westchester, New York. He left the hospital to go see the film there. Then he came back to California, and they took off his leg. He passed away a month later on June 1st while we were still making the film, and he said in his inimitable way that the film The Dukes would be his legacy, L-E-G-A-C-Y. Also, in spite of the extremely difficult time he was having financially, listen to this now, insurance and other ways. He said he never once lost his love of America or fell prey to victimhood, but believed and loved America and was a fan of yours in the Savage Nation. We spoke of you, your candidness, and uncompromising principles often. And then he sends me an email later on, and he says, you'll never guess the kind of fans you have in Hollywood. I'll tell you about it when I come back and we get a dinner together. You know, these are a group of stand-up Italian guys from New York who've been out in Los Angeles probably for 30 years. I don't know any of them, but I got to tell you, I can't wait to have a drink of wine with them. I'll be right back. Savage. Savage Nation, we're celebrating today because Savage has beat CARE on a fees motion. You can read about it on michaelsavage.com. Many of you have contributed money to my legal defense fund. Let me tell you something. This is a victory for you as well as a victory for me personally. It's not that I won the case. It's that I won their fee motion against me which from the beginning was ludicrous, and the amount of money they demanded was just way out of bounds with reality. And I'm glad to say that although the judge is known as a liberal in a liberal court, she said, no, you've gone over the edge. Forget it. She threw them out, threw the case out, really. There's another very important story on MichaelSavage.com. Ex-Hitler Youth issues dire warning to America. It is worth your reading in its entirety. I've linked it up from WorldNet Daily. Here is a man who grew up in Nazi Germany. He was a child in Hitler's Germany. He actually fought in the German army as a tank gunner. He was captured by the Soviets. And he is warning us right now. His name is Van Kamp. And he says this. He says, every day brings this nation closer to Nazi-style totalitarian abyss. Now listen to what he's saying. He's warning you, like I've been warning you, that the liberals of today are not liberals. He says, I live the Nazi nightmare. And as the old saying goes, a man with an experience is never at the mercy of a man with an argument. Everything I write is based on my personal experience in Nazi Germany. And there is nothing theoretical about my description of what happens when a nation throws God out of government and society and Christians become religious bystanders. I don't want to see a repetition. He writes, the role of God in human society is the decisive issue for this generation. My writing is part of my life of restitution for the crimes of a godless government, of the evil of which I was a part, close quote. This goes right to Proposition 8. The backers of homosexual marriage have targeted the Mormons. They've targeted religious people, and they've tried to turn them into the enemy. I've got to tell you right now that it's much more than gay marriage. It's about totalitarianism, and I'm sorry to report to you that all of the liberals who are backing the gay mafia are on the wrong side of history. They're actually leading us to a Nazi-style totalitarian abyss. And you better listen to a man who grew up under the Nazis, a man who served in the Hitler Youth and fought against the Red Army in the Yugoslavian theater as a tank gunner. He knows what socialism is. And he says, it took me a long time to understand and define the nature of National Socialism. And unfortunately, their philosophy continues to flourish under different labels, remaining a menace to America and for human society. It boiled down to accepting the truth that as I am, so is my nation, and realizing that if every German was like me, it was no wonder that the nation became a cesspool of gangsters. The realization is as valid today for any person in any nation as it was then, and it is true for America and every American now. Well, this is a story about political freedom and democratic rules. And here comes the hard part. Democratic procedures can be subverted, and dishonest politicians are like sand in the gearbox. Abundant, everywhere, and destructive. Did you hear that? Dishonest politicians? I would say that Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jerry Brown, and Mayor Newsom are dishonest politicians. Now, why do I say it? Because they're saying to you, although you voted, drop dead. Well, what does that say to you? They believe in democracy? It makes them the sand in the gearbox, and they're destructive. And this former Nazi goes on to say, what I see in America today is people painting their cabins while a ship goes down. Today in America, we are witnessing a repeat performance of the tragedy of 1933, when an entire nation let itself be led like a lamb to the socialist slaughterhouse. This time, the end of freedom is inevitable unless America rises to her mission and destiny. And what does he mean by that? He says, the silence from our pulpits regarding the moral collapse of American society from within is not very different from the silence that echoed from the pulpits of Germany during Nazi policies. Specifically, he warns Americans that their political leaders are on the wrong footing. And he says, denying our cultural and traditional roots based on our unique constitution and Christian orientation as a nation, Christians don't understand their mission. God bless him. God bless him for understanding the danger we are in. And remember what Michael Savage said. For 15 years now, I've been preaching to you. Borders, language, culture. Borders, language, culture. Don't let the radical leftists steal your culture from you. Don't let them steal your border from you. Don't let them steal their language from you. God bless America. God bless America. May the totalitarians disappear.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now.
now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Let's have some church bells out there, guys, because we got to celebrate victory on the Savage Nation today. That's it. Come on. Let's have some fun. If you have just joined us on the Savage Nation, we are celebrating because a court in San Francisco has thrown out a claim by CAIR, C-A-I-R, for a considerable amount of money against Michael Savage. And that shows you that we have hope that even in a liberal court with a liberal judge, sometimes the law will be fair and just, and there's hope for us. There's another topic, which is that the people have voted here in California on gay marriage, and they said no to gay marriage. They said it by an overwhelming majority. And in the African-American community, it was even by a larger majority, 7 out of 10. But that's not good enough for Governor Schwarzenegger, that's not good enough for Attorney General Jerry Brown. They would like to tell the voters that their votes don't count. Well, of course, they've enlisted all of their friends in the media, including guys like Larry King, and they've invited me to be on the show tomorrow night to discuss Proposition 8. The host is some left-wing, loudmouth like a Macy's buyer from The View, Joy Behar. I don't even know who she is. And on it will be Annie Tuesom Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, a guy who writes a sex column for a gay magazine, a gay website, a musician I never heard of, a church guy I never heard of, a lesbian who I never heard of. Oh, how exciting. And I guess they want to set me up as a sock puppet. I'm not sure I want to go on. But if you want to talk about any of these topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website, which is very important, is michaelsavage.com, okay? Very important. Hawaii, Cass, you're on the Savage Nation. Cass, are you there? Gone with the wind. Next case. Lorraine, San Diego, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Michael, for standing up for the Constitution. I'm a Constitution baby born on the 17th of September, and I just want to let you know that I listen to you faithfully, and thank you for all of your information, your knowledge, and it's first and most of all pointing out how much of a dummy I am, so because I am for sure for not knowing the things that you're bringing to our attention. I should have known them, born and raised in California, and especially L.A. So I just want to thank you.
Call yourself a dummy. You know, let me explain something. I've had the good fortune of having an awful lot of education. Two real master's degrees, a real PhD from the University of California at Berkeley, which was published as a book. It doesn't make me smarter than the next guy. It makes me better educated than the next guy. But that's not my real gift. My real gift is being able to take all this knowledge and boil it down so that the person listening can get the information they need to make decisions. That's my real gift, Lorraine.
Right. And I'm thankful for that. And so I just wanted to let you know.
Well, Lorraine, let me ask you something, because I want to give you a psychological nudity test. Which story do you want to read when you get the book?
About the crazy monkey.
Okay, Louie and the Crazy Monkey. The book's going out to you. Why does everyone remember Louie and the Crazy Monkey, Dead Man's Pants, and Fat Al's Tuna? That's all anyone remembers. Sacramento, Georgia, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mr. Savage. Thank you. My 92-year-old father is making me call you right now. He heard you on the radio. He listens to you when he can. And he said he should go on this show.
Well, you know, your dad is a sweet man, but he thinks that I can go on the show and get a fair shake. I think your dad doesn't know how television works. They control the microphone. They control the cameras. If you say something that makes your point and they disagree with you, they cut your microphone off and they cut away from you and they go to one of the other side to make it sound like you don't know what you're talking about. It's almost a no-win situation unless you have a fairness there. But there's no fairness doctrine on CNN. You know that.
And he said to tell you that spaghetti is still pasta in our house.
So he'd like to read the book, huh, When Pasta Was Spaghetti?
Yeah.
All right, stay in the line. You're getting a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Guys, play When Pasta Was Spaghetti and cut it off when you have to, if you have to. Dig it up. It's okay. We can wait. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I have an interview coming up that's going to be fantastic. It's with Paul Liebman of the Los Angeles Times about the gangster squad here in Los Angeles that was created in the 1940s and 50s when the cops were able to be cops. You understand what I'm saying? Do you have When Pasta Was Spaghetti to play? Go play
it.
The
hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then. In neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged-over window on a cold winter's eve, there was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea.
Savage.
We're back with Paul Lieberman from the LA Times talking about his series of stories covering the gangster squad that stopped the penetration of organized crime into Los Angeles when cops could be cops. So how successful was the LAPD's gangster squad?
Well, let me tell you some of the things they did, which is what's interesting. I mean, as I told you before, they went when they tallied it up, it was shocking. They had not gotten a conviction in a mob killing in 50, 60 years. Not one that stuck. So what they did is, you know, they resorted to other means. They would take the hoodlums up in the hills, and one of my cops would put a gun in the ear of these guys and tell them, this isn't Cleveland, this isn't Detroit, this isn't New York, this isn't Chicago, and maybe you want to go back home. And then I loved the line. He'd stick a gun, and you ask him, what did you say? Well, maybe I said, do you want to sneeze? Do you feel a sneeze coming on, a real loud sneeze? And this would be at night up in the hills, and the idea was maybe that would convince the guy to go back home. With Jack Dragna, who was the head of the Italian mafia, I mean, he was unlike Mickey. He kept to himself and didn't draw attention to himself. And they never could. They couldn't get bugs close to him. So what they did is they bugged the headboard of the bed of his mistress. He had a mistress. They broke into her apartment, stuck a bug right in the sun pattern. She had a sunburst pattern in her headboard. Put the bug right in the sun, drilled a hole back in the wall, you know, led a line down to the basement, and they listened in while he and his mistress did their thing. And this guy was a mafia boss, and he was trying to kill Mickey Cohen for years, and he killed, a lot of bodies were falling in that era. Never could get him for murder. You know what they got him for? Lewd conduct. Based on the bug in his headboard. I mean, that was typical of you got what victories you could. And I will give you one more story, Michael. One of my main cops, frustrated in their inability to get Mickey Cohen, convinced one of Mickey's guards at his home to quit and to suggest to Mickey that he hire someone else in his place, a guy who had great credentials, who had been a munitions expert in the war. And this other fellow happened to be Sergeant Jack O'Mara's paid informant. And so one day, the cop gets the guard to convince Mickey that his guns could use a cleaning and test firing. The guard takes all of Mickey's guns out of the home, brings them to the police firing range, takes off the butt plates, etches his initials under the butt plates, puts the butt plates back on, gives them to Mickey's guard, who brings them back to Mickey. Mickey says, oh, thank you very much for doing this, and, you know, he has the guns back. Well, they've now planted a trap for Mickey Cohen. If his guns ever show up at a murder, they'll know they're his. Of course, they're not registered to him, no surprise.
And the trap was set, and it took 10 years for those guns to show up at a murder. But they did, and it was at the murder of Jack the Enforcer Whalen, who is this other one-man Irish gang. So that's some of the stuff they did.
Were these rough tactics effective?
In a way, on the surface, if you looked at getting convictions, they finally did get a conviction in a gang murder. Whether it was the right guy or not, you have to read the material to see whether that's the case. But finally, the first time in the 20th century, they did. But the what happened in the courts was trivial to what happened outside the courts. And the most significant thing was that L.A. never developed a mafia like there was back east. In fact, it later was derided as a Mickey Mouse mafia. And the case could be made that these guys were partially responsible for that. I mean, they sort of convinced the mob that L.A. was not a very hospitable place. So I think in the end, they had that satisfaction.
The gangster squad's image had a little help from the media in Hollywood back then, I guess.
Well, I will tell you. I mean, again, there's what the public sees, the civilians. You know, and of course, our society is the same way today. You're given a certain picture by any institution. It's not just police departments. It's not just politicians. It's not just those of us in the media. I mean, in some ways, we present the public image, and then there's what goes on behind the scenes. There were two things that really changed the image of the LAPD in the 1950s. I mean, it had been a horribly corrupt department, and it really did gain the reputation as the most professional in the country. Two things changed it. Number one was this Chief Parker, who had been in charge of the detention facilities for the Germans at Normandy in the war, and he was a lawyer, and he was into internal affairs. He was a tough guy, and he really imposed a new military discipline on the LAPD. They looked good. They started being they were trained. They were educated. That was one thing that helped promote the image of the LAPD, and rightfully so. The second thing was Dragnet. First, it was a radio show, and then a great TV show. And it was started by this guy, Jack Webb, who was a young actor, producer, and it was about two very by-the-book kind of yes-ma'am cops. The famous line was, "Just the facts, ma'am." And Jack Webb, who played Sergeant Friday, and his partner, you know, would go through the cases. Well, the LAPD, seeing that this burnished their image, always provided Jack Webb with their files. And in fact, the one time he made a movie based on Dragnet in 1954 was actually based on a case handled by the gangster squad, then was being called intelligence, in which he, you know, one of the main characters was the head of it, Captain Hamilton, Chief Parker, and they were huge hero characters. Well, meanwhile, here's the realpolitik. Here's how the world works. Jack Webb was married to one of the great sexy singers of the day, this woman, Julie London, and if you're old enough, you remember her, and I invite people to Google her, because she was, you know, really the item. Well, they were married, and then they went the way of Hollywood and were getting a divorce. So here's how the world works. He calls up the chief of police. His show Dragnet is doing wonders for the LAPD, says, "I'm going through this hairy divorce, and can you guys give me a little help? Can you send over one of the bug men?" And I tell the story. One of the bug men recalls being sent over, and Webb had his own private eye and wanted help to bug his wife, who he was going through this very costly divorce with. And that's sort of what happened. I mean, he did them a favor, and they did him a favor. So there's the realpolitik of the world. Jack Webb, to the end of his days, was still creating great pictures of the LAPD.
What ultimately became of the men of the gangster squad?
Well, people, civilians, what I call them, who hear what these guys did, took hoodlums up into the hills. And I always say, what do you think these guys did when they retired? First of all, let me say, none of them retired with glory, in a way. You do the dirty job. This is the same in the military, in any kind of institution like this. You're really given the dirty job. You know, in the end, they don't make you heroes. Some of the bosses get credit for this, but the ones who are insulated from the dirty work that you do in these jobs, and almost all felt they weren't appreciated. They slunk out of the LAPD when they could retire. One of my main cops was sent to the jail for his final years. I mean, jail duty, et cetera, et cetera. So all the guys kind of retired somewhat bitter about their police careers, and I will ask what I call civilians, well, what do you think they did in their lives? And most of them say, well, maybe they could have been security guards or something like that. I can't tell you how wrong they were. The most roguish of my cops, the one who went furthest over the line and sort of developed an alliance with this mobster called the Enforcer, he became a multimillionaire businessman. I mean, he helped contractors put in garage doors, security systems, everything under the sun, developed shopping centers, had residential properties. He became multimillionaire with a house on the beach, sat in his backyard, and he kind of joked in his later days that his police pension paid his liquor bill, and he'd sit back there with his buddies and watch the shapely young beach girls go by. That was one of them. A couple of others became fabulously rich, also were very clever. One of the bug men, the one who did a favor for Jack Webb, guess what he did? Went to law school, became a lawyer, then became a judge, got training at Oxford, tried murder cases. The bug man became one of the most distinguished judges in L.A. Finally, the guy who took the hoodlums up in the hills, he became head of racetrack security for the two big racetracks in L.A. County, and that was kind of interesting, but he also had a daughter who was particularly bright, and the daughter of the cop who took hoodlums up in the hills got a Ph.D. in business affairs and real estate from Harvard and taught at Harvard. So, I mean, it was, these guys really were the best and the brightest. I mean, as I said, they had been through the war, they'd been through the Depression. In another era, I'm not sure what they would have done in younger life, but police work in that era was well paid, it was secure, and it attracted these very brave and brilliant guys. So afterwards, I mean, I say that's really justice. While they had those careers, Mickey Cohen died a cripple in his early 60s, with an estate of $3,000.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
That was just to work in psychological nudity, because that's what you get on this show on a daily basis. Take it or leave it. That's what it is. You get sagittal sections of my brain over a three-hour span, and that's what we're talking about. The big story today to me can be found on my website, which is that a judge found in my favor, really in the favor of justice and the favor of America, by throwing out a claim for fees against me by CAIR. And I don't have to tell you who they are. I don't have to tell you who they are. Whenever you see a situation that gets you totally nuts, things you cannot believe are happening in this country, there are groups like that behind them. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. There's new pictures of me on the election night cruise up on the website. Some of them are nice. I think you'll enjoy them. Here's a couple of other stories. Audio tapes unearthed. Jim Jones's followers were enthralled by his speaking skills. I guess they're talking about someone else who was enthralled, so many liberal, young, idealistic children, particularly white children in progressive America today, with his themes of socialism, equality, and political activism. But no, they're talking about Jim Jones. And you got to read the story, because I didn't write it. It was written by a fellow who works for CNN. And it says that audio tapes were unearthed. And this is an amazing story. It says, the key to understanding the tragedy that was Jonestown lies in the oratory skills of the People's Temple founder, Jim Jones. With the cadence and fervor of a Baptist preacher, who does that remind you of? The charm and folkiness of a country storyteller, and the zeal and fury of a maniacal dictator, Jim Jones exhorted his followers to a fever pitch. Audio tapes recovered from Jonestown reveal. He enraptured followers with dynamic preaching style staged faith healings. What's interesting about this is that there are millions of Americans who have been taken in by another charismatic speaker who is also preaching almost the same message, by the way. Sort of a rock star rather than a politician. And he preached to white liberals, and he taught them, he taught many young idealistic liberal white people in progressive 1970s California the themes of socialism, equality and political activism, just as the Democrats are doing today. And he justified his brand of socialism with the Bible for those recruited from more conservative religious factions who might have found such left-wing ideas tough to swallow. Jim Jones said the only ethic by which we can lift mankind today is some form of socialism, that he said in 1972. And he went on to say, there's a smattering of it in the New Testament. It's very evidently clear on the day of Pentecost that they that believe were together and had all things common. Socialism, he said, is older than the Bible by far. Of course, he took his followers to the Kool-Aid, and many of them even wrote personal notes to him expressing their willingness to die for their cause. He said that was the ultimate test of their loyalty, and that was their willingness to die for him. Be very careful about charismatic politicians. You never know where they might lead you, and the only thing to stand between them and the abyss is free speech. And, of course, the phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. You want to read that story and many others. Will Hillary Clinton be named Secretary of State? They're speculating that Obama may appoint her. Ex-Hitler Youth issues a dire warning to America. And he says the U.S. is moving closer to a Nazi-style government, not because of the right wing in this country, but because of the left-wing socialists who I rail against on a regular basis on the Savage Nation. Sacramento, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage. First of all, I agree with you about the fairness doctrine. I wanted to make a comment about that. I don't think you should go on the show because I think they're going to enact the fairness doctrine right then and there, try to keep you quiet.
Well, I try to explain how television works. They control the cameras and the microphone. If I say something that makes my point or makes me look too good, they will cut that off and they will move the camera off me and onto the antagonist to make them look smart.
Absolutely. I think they're just going to try to keep you from making your point and just try to keep you, you know, start the fairness doctrine right there by keeping you quiet, not letting you say what you really feel and what other viewers out there may be feeling exactly like you do.
Well, it seems to me that the majority of people in California, Arizona, and Florida think the way I do. Apparently, that's not good enough for Larry King. Apparently, that's not good enough for the governor of the state of California who told the voters their vote doesn't matter. He's going to shop it to the judges again. Apparently, they don't believe in democracy. They believe in hypocrisy.
Huh.
Brian, thanks for the call. San Antonio, Pablo, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to thank you for taking my call. And from the bottom of my heart, Dr. Savage, I wanted to congratulate you on your lawsuit. It's not just a victory for you, but it's for me and for all of America, whether Americans want to acknowledge that or not. I mean, not only do you stand for truth, Dr. Savage, you are the epitome of truth, and you're God's mouthpiece for America. And as far as Larry King goes, I'll just put it to you this way. Just don't cast your pearls before the swine. There's no need to go on that.
I don't think there is, and frankly, I'm very honored that they would think so highly of me to try to set me up as a dummy to be knocked down, but I don't think I need a bowling ball thrown at me every 2 seconds, do you?
No, not at all. Like I said, don't cast your pearls before.
What they're going to probably get is some grade B talk show host who's desperate for attention, who'll make a fool of himself, and they'll be satisfied that everyone in the conservative side is an inarticulate dolt. But the fact of the matter is, if I were able to have equal time with any one of them, in fact, any three of them at any time, ask anyone who knows me, you put me in a room with any three of them, in fact, all of them, and you give me my microphone and don't edit it, and you let those cameras run, I'd mop the floor with them for one reason, because the truth and the people are on my side, not on the side of unfairness, not on the side of bigotry, not on the anti-family side, and certainly not on the unconstitutional side, and that's where all of the rest of them are, and I thank you for calling. Boston, Massachusetts, WRKO, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I'm going to say that victory you had is the first good news, politically speaking, that I've heard in months now. Thank God for that. And
It's very interesting, but this is the first good news about a conservative and for a conservative in America since Barack Obama's election. And it's posted on my website. It was posted by WorldNet Daily. Breitbart picked it up. I'm going to ask my audience to do me a favor. Why don't you monitor your local channels, your news, your radio, your TV, and your papers, and see if they're really fair and balanced. See how many of them report on this conservative, this small, it is true small, but very significant conservative victory that we have been talking about tonight, Chris. I doubt very much that the so-called fair and balanced newspapers understand that 52 million people can't all be wrong.
You and I both know that it won't cover it correctly, but we'll listen anyway and see. But I wanted to tell you, I called you about a little over a year ago. I was driving a taxi back then, and I was listening to a show. I don't know if you remember the conversation. And some lady stepped in the cab and told me to shut it off. That's horrible. And she was reporting me and all this horrible stuff she said to me. And, you know, I wanted to let you know, I got so aggravated. I called you, and you listened patiently and let me go on more than you usually let anyone go on. And then, I got mad because you told me, you said, you know, you're too nice, Chris. I started thinking about it. I got mad. You know what I did about it? I stopped driving that cab so no one could control my car ever again. I started my own courier company. I'm making more than I did then, and I don't have to put up with that ever again. So,
yeah, I love it. You see the old lemonade story.
Yeah,
and every loss, well, it was another way to put it, which is whenever a door, when one door closes, another door opens. It's inevitable in life. Many of us think that we lose a job or we have to leave a job or leave a profession, it's all over. But usually, almost 100% of the time, other doors will open.
Absolutely. Can I ask a request from you?
Yes.
Can you please, I love, when pasta was spaghetti, but I really wish you'd go over it. There was a story you told, I only heard it once, about your father's store and how a black man came in. And how he paid attention to him and how that turned the whole thing around. I wish you'd read that story on the air because I love that story.
Well, first of all, I'm sending you a free copy of my new autobiography, Psychological Nudity. Thanks for bringing that one up. You know, that story happens not to be in the book. I found about four now that haven't been in Volume 1. Maybe they'll be down a year from now or whatever, God willing, if I'm still here and still functioning the way I want to. But I'll tell the story anyway because it's a worthy story. My father had a small store. It was actually a stall within a store, an antiques market. They sold everything from junk to reasonably nice things. And he had like three booths put together. And he sold primarily clocks and statues, bronze statues, 19th century French, which I learned to appreciate greatly. And he taught me a lot of things as I was a little kid there. And you could still learn from this. If you go to a museum and you look at sculpture, take a look at some of the statues in the museums, and look at the hands and look at the feet. Dad taught me that you can judge an artist in a painting or in a sculpture by the hands and the feet. He said, many people can paint the body very well and the face very well, but they can't do hands and feet. And it's always been true. We went to a Los Angeles County Museum last week, and I saw a great collection. It was a fabulous piece made out of marble. And you got to look at the hands and feet. It's astounding to see what great art really is. Anyway, so that's, I grew up in that kind of environment and working in the store. And various people would come in, odd people. You know, in those days, you're talking about a very unusual childhood. And many of the customers happened to be gay. They were decorators, so I was exposed very young to very nice people. And you have to understand, I have no anti-gay bias. I'm just against gay marriage. I want to make that very clear. And my father never had any anti-gay bias. He never said a nasty word. In other words, when the guy left, he was different than the other men. The other men were gruff and they were rough, and these guys were usually well-dressed, and they had a sort of cologne on. And I didn't know why they were different in that way. And he never, ever made a disparaging remark about the decorators. I got to tell you, off the bat, I was not raised to hate anybody. I got to tell you that. So amongst the variety of humanity that would come through that market, and it would get very busy on a Sunday, mainly on, you know, gapers, onlookers. It was almost like a Coney Island in there because people loved the oddity of it, the strange things that they would find, were many different people. But during the week, I remember once I took off from school, I went in with my father, and a black man came in, which was very unusual in the sense that he didn't have a lot of black customers in those days. I'm talking about the 50s. Man was very well-dressed. Very thin, I can remember him to this day, and very polite and very quiet and soft-spoken. I didn't know who he was. So the man comes in, and my father didn't know him. He didn't know my father. She says to my father, how much is that one? My father says, 300. How much is that one? He says, 500. How much is that one? 800. How much is that clock? 1,200. How much is that one? 900. How much is that one? He went through like 15 pieces. The man quietly didn't chisel him. He said, I'll take them all. Would you please make a note of it and write it? The guy, like, bought 20 pieces or whatever. It was a huge sale. Well, it turned out that this gentleman, this black gentleman, was an antique dealer himself in either North or South Carolina, and he came to New York, you know, to buy and bring it down there to sell, you know, at a higher price. Just as my father bought from importers and marked it up to make his living, this fellow went to New York to buy from, you know, a retailer who was relatively inexpensive in a poor neighborhood to bring it to his more up-end, higher-end. So to make a long story short and to conclude it, as the gentleman is leaving and he wrote a check, the man leaves. My father says, thank you very much. My father brings me, says, come over here. I want to tell you something. He said, you just learn. If you learn from this, you'll learn a lesson for the rest of your life. I said, what's that lesson? He said, never, ever judge a man by how he looks. Give every man an equal chance. You just don't know who people are. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Time is very, very short, so I'm going to go to a caller right now on WOR in New York who has an amazing request. Patrick, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I would love to hear the story, My Silent Brother. I heard you talk about a story before where your brother was attacked by some maniac shortly before he died. And, you know, it was that story was just heart-wrenching. And I just think it's
beautiful. It is. You know, I don't know if I could do this right now. I'm going to try to do it, but if I have to cut it off, you'll understand why. It's a very big day for me. And the fact of the matter is, almost every day of my life, I feel guilty that I'm here and he isn't. I don't know how else to put it. Maybe I have survivor's guilt or something. I don't really know, Patrick. But I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity, and I'll read My Silent Brother. It's only two pages in the book, page 65. I remember the day they gave Jerome away. My Uncle Murray was crying like a baby in front of the South Bronx tenement we lived in. All the neighbors were out watching. Think Calcutta, a Sajiat Ray film. The little blonde boy with blue eyes was only five. I was seven. My sister was nine. He was packed off like an animal to live and suffer and die in silence, alone in one New York snake pit after another. The doctor told my parents he would only live to age seven. He lied. The great man also told my parents, quote, it would be better for the other children to give him away. This created a lifetime of shame and guilt for me. I became emotionally responsible for discarding this helpless little boy, who I loved more than anyone else in my entire life. How I loved my little defenseless brother, born blind and deaf and unable to hold himself up. All those times I would secretly sneak into the kitchen where he sat propped up in his high chair. Don't go in there. Don't bother him. He can't see you or hear you anyway. But I would go and whistle to him, and his eyes would light up. I would see a sparkle where the doctor said there was only darkness, so I knew he could hear me whistling to him and see my shadow or smell me. He was alive. He was alive. And they were told to exile him for my sake. After he was gone, the little apartment became more silent. I can't do this. I'm sorry. I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I cannot do this. I can't do this anymore. Let me just read the last line of this story, because it's about the last time I'm ever going to read it. Finally, after about 20 years in one hellhole after another, he died after being attacked and bitten on most of his body by a maniac, housed there with helpless, innocent souls unable to defend themselves. Jerome is buried in the same cemetery as my mother and father in hard clay soil in an old Long Island potato field. He was the Jesus of our family who died for my sins. That's it. That's it. I'm in a total sweat right now. I didn't really think I'd go here today, but in a way, maybe it's appropriate. I mean, every victory, you know, has more to it than meets the eye, and everyone's celebration has more individuals involved than you may see, including people who are deceased, because we are not alone. I've said this to friends. I've said it to family. I've said it to people on my show. We are the product of millions of years of evolution. Every one of us, we don't even realize it. We're so ego-driven. We're so narcissistic that we think there was no life before us, and we think there'll be no life after us. If only we could all stop and take a deep breath and realize that we're all part of a continuum and see where we fit into that great scheme of things, maybe we could all get along better. I don't mean to sound like a Rodney King here, but it's when we push our agendas like this marriage business, constantly telling people to change their minds after thousands of years of evolution, millions of years, rather, of evolution, thousands of years of cultural and social evolution. Every religion on earth understands what marriage is, and then you have a group of narcissistic egomaniacs who think that because they have money and power in the media, they're suddenly going to push the river. and change the world. Well, the world doesn't change that easily, and sometimes the world pushes back. No, maybe we have to take a deep breath and realize that we're not alone. We're all part of the same continuum. And your ancestors came before you, and your descendants will follow you. That's whether you're married or not. You're just one small dot along this tremendous journey called civilization and life. And what I'm getting at here is, although I sit before you and you hear a powerful voice and you think it's an individual man speaking to you, which it is, of course I'm an individual and I'm alive, it's a temporal thing. My life is quite temporal. Your life is quite temporal. It's part of a long, long, long spectrum of humanity. And I'm not sitting here alone. I'm sitting here with all of my ancestors in this room in front of this microphone. You're sitting there in your room or you're sitting there in your car and you think you're alone. You're never alone. You didn't get born by accident. Many of you don't even know that you're here for a purpose. You don't even know when that purpose comes. Many of us don't even know when that purpose comes. And one day I'll tell you many stories that I've heard from very religious people, psychic people, mystical people, about how insignificant events can have very significant results. And that you can be part of those things. The very famous story of a rabbi who was told by his chief rabbi to come to Belgium for a certain reason. And he flew all the way to Belgium, but he stopped along the way in London. And he sat on a bench waiting for a plane, and a man came up and they had a long talk. The man wanted to commit suicide. Well, the rabbi talked them out of it. They departed. The first rabbi went all the way to Belgium. He came there and he said, "What'd you call me for, rabbi? Why'd you have me come all the way here?" And the chief rabbi said, "Tell me what happened on the way." And he told him what happened. He said, "Now you can go home. That's the reason I called you."